Happy Friday evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I want to give a shout-out to Robert Gregory Brown for our lovely theme music. You can find him at robertgregorybrown.com. Tonight, my guest is someone I met several years ago, and she's very near and dear to my heart because she is, or was formerly, a federal prosecutor for crimes against women and children, specifically sex crimes, domestic violence, and, as I said, crimes against children. She has been writing her one serious character for a while now, and I'm so happy that she's with me today. Her new book is called The Last Good Girl, and I want you to welcome to the show, and it's my honor to have her here, Allison Liotta. Hi, Allison. Welcome to Authors on the Air. Finally.
Hi, Pam. Thanks so much. I'm so glad to be here with you today.
I'm thrilled that you're here. We've often talked about it, and I think last time you were going to come on, I was having hip surgery or something, so we never did get together again. But I'm thrilled that we bumped into each other at VoucherCon and that this book is out so we can finally talk. Congratulations.
Me too, and that your hip is feeling better.
And now I have to have the other one done. You know, I have to have
goodness.
Matching. You know, I'm one of those people that needs symmetry in their life, so.
You poor thing.
So, no, it's an easy thing, and I have a really cute doctor. I mean, he's really cute, so. Okay. It's an easy procedure. It's an easy procedure, but thank you for saying that. I am looking at the cover of my copy of The Last Good Girl, and it has blown me away because the basic story, well, let's have you tell the basic story, and then let's say why it's so topical.
Well, in this story, I have my series heroine is a sex crimes prosecutor named Anna, and in this book, she is investigating the disappearance of a young woman from a college campus. And as Anna starts to dig into this young woman's life, she realizes that this young woman, Emily, had been sexually assaulted early on in her college career, and that the college has been hiding some very dirty secrets about how it handles investigating sex assaults. And Anna has to kind of plow through all that to hopefully find this girl before it's too late.
I have to say that I was struck, of course, by reading this because it's such a topical issue. It seems like this year, more than any other I can remember, we've heard about sexual assault cases, rapes on campus. Not only, well, in high schools, but particularly in college, and that there is an underreporting of it that's so horrible. And it scares me. I have a niece who's on campus at Stanford. She is a huge women's rights advocate, and I know that she and a lot of the other students have actually marched and talked about this. This is a very topical issue. Knowing what your past career as a federal sex crimes prosecutor, was this something that you handled, or were those cases that were done in the state system?
Right, that's a great question. By the time it had reached my desk as a sex crimes prosecutor in D.C., that was really the tip of the iceberg. The vast majority of sex assaults are not reported ever to anyone, 80%,
right.
It's estimated. So if it reached my desk, it was already a rare bird. And I think what a lot of young women don't realize, young men too, who might be victims, don't realize when they make a report to their college and to the college campus police, the college is not necessarily required to pass that information on to the local police, to the sheriff of the county or the state, the DA's office. So the college is supposed to start its own investigation, but it's a disciplinary action. It's private. The only real result is that the accused can be expelled. That's the worst thing that can happen to him if he's found responsible. But I think that for many years, women did not know, survivors did not know that they had to make two different reports if they wanted the police to get involved. And what happened within the college campuses was the colleges had just such a huge incentive to, pick up a broom and start sweeping it under a rug, and many of them did, often, constantly.
Yeah. Yes, I am aware of that. As you know that I'm a certified victim advocate. I work with domestic violence and sex assault cases. It was really difficult working on children's cases and a whole nother dynamic for me. But this topic is really timely. So I know that you, when you write your books, this is number 5, and congratulations, by the way, on that. When
you
started writing, you made a choice to focus on the issues that you knew best. So when Law of Attraction came out, that was the first one, right? Law of Attraction?
Right.
Yes. You decided to write what you really did know and
mm-hmm.
focus on women's issues. Are you that you're going to continue in that vein? Because if you are, you're my Shiro, if you are.
Oh,
because
thank you.
So few women can talk about this with knowledge and actually weave a story that leaves an impression with their readers.
Well, it's good to hear that it did leave an impression with you. And that's what I hope that I like to read a book that has me thinking about the issues afterwards, and I hope that's what
yeah.
I managed with The Last Good Girl, and I appreciate you saying that.
Yes,
I don't
absolutely.
Know what's next. I could keep writing Anna and this series about this sex crimes prosecutor. I have 2 little kids. They're saying, please, Mommy, write something that we can read because I don't let my
oh,
kids read my book. They're a little too racy for the little ones.
Yeah.
So my next book might be about female pirates or I don't know. I'm not
But that's
not
okay.
Sure.
I mean, you that's wonderful that they want you to write for them.
It is. It's really nice. It's very sweet. I definitely have to write one for them. I don't know if I'll publish it or not, and then get back to my regularly scheduled, thriller writing.
I love your thriller writing. Are you excited about how well received your books are?
It's been great to hear. I mean, there's 2 different types of reviews that I get that just make me so happy. One are people who just say, "I read it in 4 hours. I devoured it. I couldn't put it down." You know, and that just makes me feel like I did a good job as a novelist, as an entertainer, you know, just keeping someone entertained. But I've gotten a lot of people who reached out to me recently in emails or in reviews to say, who are survivors of sex assault, and to just say, look, you got this right, and it meant so much to me to
yeah.
read it and to understand that what I'm going through is a normal thing and everybody goes through it, and it just really touched me. And those emails, they just send a chill down my spine in the best kind of way. And it's more than just, you know, writing a story to get the pages turning. It's like I've really helped someone, and that's amazing to hear.
I really think that that's true. I think you do help people because, especially survivors. And I don't even know if they're survivors, if they've gone through, you know, certainly victims anyway. But I think you do. And, you know, that makes a good case for reading fiction, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's part of the reason why we read it, is to understand what happened in our lives or may have happened to our friends, our family, and just to, you know, get a sense of, you know, how everybody processes these things, these, you know, ups and downs and tragedies and recoveries and how we heal from it, and to see that.
Well, your reviews have been excellent, both from readers and from the professional editorial reviews. Kirk has raved about it. I know that in previous books you were a pick by O, the Oprah magazine. Romance Reviews today said it was a perfect 10. Linda Fairstein, who just, you know, who's a doll and has been on this show several times, she says you're one of the very best crime writers, and that coming from also a prosecutor, you know, is a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
Library
she's,
Journal
she's
gives
fantastic.
You, yeah, gives you starred reviews. USA Today, Washington Post. You're the female John Grisham, according to Providence Journal, and God bless George Pelicanos, who wrote a terrific little blurb for you. Are you having fun?
Yes, well, I mean, when you listen like that, that does seem really fun. It does seem great. Those are, yeah, that you know, meeting people like Linda Fairstein and George Pelicanos,
uh-huh.
who are obviously my writing idols and who I just think are amazing and having them read my books and say nice things about them, that's just phenomenal. It's just been phenomenal. But I'll tell you what, I have been called the female John Grisham, and I will know I've really made it when Grisham is called the male Allison Liotta.
There you go. I wish that that would happen soon. I absolutely agree. What a great thing. I love that. Well, better than my kids right now, I have to tell you. I wasn't too impressed. I love your books. Allison, you know, you mentioned that you've got little kids. When do you write?
Whenever they're not here. Whenever they're sleeping or gone. You know, my writing style, when I write, has changed. Before I had kids, I would wake up first thing in the morning. I would write from 5 till 7 in the morning, and then I would get ready for work, and I'd go into the office. And then I got my first book deal, and I had a kid, and I was trying to do all of this at once. I was trying to prosecute and write and be a mom, and it was crazy. And I realized I could not do all three of those things and hope to do any one of them very well. So I very reluctantly left my job at the U.S. Attorney's Office. I loved that job. My dad was a federal prosecutor. My husband was a federal prosecutor. I was for 12 years, and it was just who I was. I couldn't believe I was not a prosecutor anymore. But it was such a dream come true to be able to be asked to join this writing world. I've always been such a bookworm. My books have kind of defined every moment, every kind of stage in my life. I've always kind of found myself there. So to be asked to be part of that world was just so incredible and such a dream come true. So I had to do it, and at that point my schedule changed because I didn't have to be at the office anymore. So then what I just started writing whenever the kids were in either, you know, with a babysitter in daycare, or now that they're a little bit older while they're in school. That's when I write.
How fun. Do you visualize your story when you sit down to write? Do you know where it's going, kind of, sort of? Or
do
things happen in a different way than you expect them to?
Yeah, all of the above. I totally know where the story is going. I sit down, I have a very detailed outline. I might have note cards that I've been moving around on poster board, you know, that's very high tech. But it's kind of like, I feel like I plot it all out. I know exactly where I'm going, but it's kind of like looking at a roadmap versus actually walking the streets. You know, it's only when you're walking there yourself that you see whether the shop has flowers in the window or bulletproof glass. Like, you have to be down there in it to really get to know what's going on. And definitely things have changed from my very detailed outline as I'm in the moment of writing it.
Wow. When you look back at book number one, and here you are in book number five, have you noticed a change in the way you write and your writing style?
I have, yeah. It's just, honestly, it's gotten better. And I think it's just because it's a skill. Nobody's born knowing how to play basketball, and nobody's born knowing how to write a great cliffhanger. But I've gotten the hang of it. I think there's like some Malcolm Gladwell theory about if you've done something for 10,000 hours, then you're an expert. So I think I hit 10,000 hours.
Right.
Somewhere out there, and I do feel like the writing is coming out faster, stronger, better now than it ever has, and that feels really nice.
I have to tell you, what I noticed about this book is that when I thought I saw the resolution, you not only changed it up once, you changed it up a few times. And
oh, good.
I was totally stunned at the outcome. At the end of this book, I was totally and completely stunned. It
I
just
love to
blew
hear
me
that.
Away.
Yeah. Thank
I
you.
Never
I'm
in
glad
my
I was
life.
Able to mislead you.
Well, it was so misleading because when you're coming to the critical part there, and I just was so stunned. I have to tell you, it was really amazing. So,
thank you. That really does my heart good.
Thank you for a really exciting cliffhanger times about 20. You know, just I like the fact that your dialogue really moved the story along quite fast, and it didn't feel like I was reading for a long time because I love to read, and I'm a pretty fast, efficient reader. But I was almost sorry to see it end. But I kind of know that you left the story so that Anna can come back again, right?
Right, sure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that part of it. So tell me, did you read when you were young that got you so fascinated with books?
I mean, I just read everything I could get my hands on. From, like, Shel Silverstein, I memorized a ton of his poems when I was a little girl, where the sidewalk ends, to V.C. Andrews, you know, The Flowers in the Attic. Oh, that was
reading
that in, like, third grade. It was so twisted. I loved it.
Wow.
And then, I'd always sneak into my mom's room and take, like, her romance novels. I was not supposed to be reading those, of course. And just devour those, in middle school. And then I've just always been in a book club for, like, my entire adult life. I've been in a book
club.
And so, yes. In fact, right now I'm in three book clubs. I'm kind of a book slut, and it's a lot of fun. I read a lot. I'm in two grown-up clubs and one club with my kids. It's like mom-kid book club, where we all read, like, a middle grade book together and then talk about it with the kids. The kids will talk about it for, like, 10 minutes and then go run and play, but they're all learning to read and love reading and love that they get together with their friends and talk about it. So that's actually been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're really instilling the love of books in them. Is so wonderful. Are you still writing the Primetime Crime Review?
Not so much anymore. I was doing that very regularly at the beginning. I was blogging about what TV crime dramas were getting right and wrong, and that was fun. Mm-hmm. I love the TV crime dramas. I hate them when they get something wrong. I want to throw popcorn at the TV. And it was very productive. It was much more productive than the popcorn method to just talk about what they're getting right and wrong from kind of a snarky real-life perspective. But it was taking up so much time, and my first job is to write those books. And the book a year schedule that thriller writers are on, you have to be careful about where you spend your time. You have to be disciplined with it. So I kind of put the blog on hold. Yeah.
Do you miss blogging?
No, I do not. Blogging, for me, the blogging was just it was something to raise my profile. And it was great at that. But it was, I watched these TV shows. And if you're watching the crime dramas, that show's going to be on from like 10 to 11 at night. I was watching SVU most of the time, Law & Order SVU. So I'm from 10 to 11. I have to blog. And I'm saying, what are they getting right and wrong? So I have to be right. And I was covered it. My blogs would also be carried on the Huffington Post. So I want to be very careful about what I'm saying, make sure I'm getting things right and wrong when I talk about what's right and wrong. So it would be like 3 hours. It would be like 1 a.m, maybe 2 a.m. when I finally was ready to post it. And meanwhile, my kids are going to be up at 6:00. So, No,
I don't miss it. That consumes an awful lot of time for you, an awful lot of time.
And it's the sleep, really. You have to be able to write the next day, and you can't write the next day. I can't write on 4 hours of sleep. So there's a lot of things I can do in 4 hours of sleep, but writing isn't really one of them. So
it isn't one of them, yeah.
Do
you have a word count, or do you have, when do you stop? When do you say, okay, and I've done enough today?
Yeah. Well, the first 6 months in my, like, 1 year schedule, the first 6 months is really research and outlining. And I just talk to as many people as I can. So there's no words written during that time. Those 6 months are all about, like, lunches and coffees and asking my friends who are police officers or FBI agents or other prosecutors, hey, what's going on in court? What's crazy? What's unfair? What's the weirdest thing that happened to you this week? And then outlining. Because if you're writing from that outline, like, that outline is a big part of the process. So then for 3 months, I write my first draft, and I usually am trying to make myself just pump out 2,000 to 2,500 words a day. And for me, that hard part is just getting over perfectionism, just letting myself write that, I can't say it on the radio, that bad first draft, that crummy first draft.
Right.
And
you can
spend
say anything on this show.
Writing.
We're not FCC governed, don't worry. Yeah,
okay.
It's a pain in the butt. I know. You can say whatever you want. Don't worry.
There you go.
Well, it's interesting to me because your books are thematic in that we're talking about issues that are facing women and children. Are you looking for a certain story that you can expand on that you maybe heard from your, like you said, your police friends or FBI or prosecutors or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you already know what you kind of want to write about, but you're looking for the angle or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. I just get these bits and pieces, and it starts to form and come together. This one was definitely the last good girl. I knew I wanted to write about sex assault on college campuses and how colleges are handling it, because I think it's hugely important. We've got a lot of one out of five young women heading to college campuses today will be sexually assaulted before she leaves campus. It's outrageous. And the way the colleges have been handling it, it's barbaric. Did you hear the Brigham Young story a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, I know.
These girls reported their rapes to Brigham Young, and the college kicked them out, the girls, the survivors,
right,
for violating the honor code. I mean, it's barbaric, it's outrageous, and it's something I think we need to talk about. So I knew very much going into this one that that's what I wanted. That was at least the theme. And then how do you make that happen? How do you execute that? I don't know. I a lot of just listening to stories and people who've been through it and slowly starting to piece together what would be the best and most interesting kind of dramatic way to tell that story.
Well, I think you nailed it in this story. It was just, and you know, it's sad because it isn't even, it's any type of sexual assault. It is particularly horrible on campuses, first time, you know, young women and young men are getting their chance to go, you know, so they're at Wild Oats and they think it's all going to be these fun parties and don't realize that how dangerous it is. And
right,
no matter how
yes,
many stories they've heard, they just think it can't happen to me. And
right,
so I was impressed with your, in your book, you did cite a lot of really good real information, statistics and like that. That was, I think that was really important too. I'm glad you weren't just throwing it against the wall and that you gave some really honest, you know, crime stats.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the crime stats themselves are so shocking. some of these,
they
you
are,
know, like fraternity yeah, boys are 300% more likely to rape than boys who don't join fraternities. Just crazy
yeah,
stuff. And you know, I'm not trying to, like, pound on those statistics in the book, but I mention it, and the plot, you know, goes around it. And so I hope that, you know, people, when they read it, they'll feel like, okay, this was a page-turner, but also walk away feeling like, I learned something, and, oh, my gosh, fraternities, we need to talk about how to improve fraternities. I don't know if I should let my kid go to a fraternity party, but we need to figure out how to
right,
how to make these fraternities safer, better on many levels.
And like you said, there's so much that's unreported because there's so much shame involved in it. And there's
mm-hmm,
also victim blaming by the victim
yeah,
and by other people. It's a lot of, well, if you weren't doing this or you weren't doing that, it wouldn't have happened. And I always want to say, you know, I remember when I was working in the police department as the victim advocate, and I would say to mm-hmm, someone, she said, have you ever had your, you know, has your house ever been broken into or anything ever been stolen? Oh, yeah. And I said, well, you know, you didn't live in a nice house like that, maybe it wouldn't have happened to you. Or maybe you should have lived in a better neighborhood and it wouldn't have happened to you. And they said, but, but, you know, and I say, see, that's the whole thing. You
mm-hmm,
victim blame, and that's what happens. And besides the shame of it all. And,
mm-hmm,
boy, you really went into depth with that, of the reluctance of a victim, or even a victim who wants to go forward and wants to have the right thing done. Sometimes there just is no way out for them. And it's unfortunate that many young women leave school. Some
mm-hmm,
return to other, go to other colleges, but some never go back again. And that to me is heartbreaking. That, you know, someone's life, their education is discontinued and their life has changed substantially from that.
Yeah, it's such a sad situation. I think college is this kind of odd netherworld in between childhood and adulthood where,
yes,
you know, they're out there like having adult tools for the first time, like freedom and alcohol and adult situations. But if these are adjudicated on campus, the consequence for the boy is very much like a childlike consequence. It's a, you know, we're going to
sure,
kick you out of school consequence. It's not like you go to jail consequence. But for the victim, being the girl or boy who was sexually assaulted, it is a very real adult consequence. It is
Absolutely.
Something that is going to stay with them for the rest of their life. It can just
of their
change
life.
Their life completely.
It really does. It really does. Are you thinking about your next book yet?
I'm always thinking about my next book in the sense that there's so much. Unfortunately, there's just too much inspiration in terms of crimes against women and children, you know, in the news and just hearing from my friends. So I'm
sure.
constantly sort of listening and thinking, oh, gosh, that somebody needs to write that story. You know, is that my next story? But I don't know
so
yet
how
what it's
do
going
you,
to be.
How do you pick and choose then? You're right. You've chosen, obviously, the theme for your books. So how does one in your position decide which of those threads to go ahead and build on?
Right. Well, that's such a good question, Pam, because I think usually at book signings you get the question, where do you get your ideas? And for me, it's never been a where do you get them? It's just a how do you choose them? Because there's so
yeah.
many ideas out there. You just if you listen to the news one night, you could like brainstorm five different novels just out of that.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Or even just at a coffee shop, there's like some help wanted ad that's quirky or weird or a little bit spooky, and you can, you know, you start thinking of the
sure.
novel off of that one. And so the question is how do you pick? And I don't know the answer to that. I think sometimes it's just the book you have to write. That was this one. I just had to do it. And sometimes, I don't know, the last one, A Good Killing, there was just this kernel of an idea, and it just really kept growing. It just kind of organically, I kept thinking about it, kept just mulling it and kind of chewing it over, and
mm-hmm.
it just kind of expanded from there. So I don't know that I have any one process. I can't say there's one process I've used that has become the idea factory for the five books.
Didn't you have this theme going in your books, in your real life, when you're not writing or not researching, are you more acutely aware of interaction of people, particularly couples, when you're out and about?
Yeah, I think I probably am a little bit more
yeah.
so than before. And I wish I'd been taking notes before. I never took notes on the job. I never thought I was going to be a writer, so. I kind of wish I'd done that. But, yeah, you definitely see the world through a different lens. I heard that people who write for The Onion, you know, as they go through their whole life, they're like thinking, is this a joke? Is this a joke? Everything is material, right?
Right.
Nora
right.
Ephron said, oh, everything's copy. And that's kind of
that's right.
how I feel now. Like I keep any time somebody says something or any interaction, it's like, oh, that could, you know, that could work its way in for sure.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. I just wonder if you ever get a break from it. I guess it's I'm acutely aware of people arguing, particularly when I'm out and about, or the way parents discipline children, or things like that. And you know, there's a fine line before you want to say something as a human being. You know. But then that part of you that knows right from wrong, you don't want to interfere, but you also want to say, gosh, if you only knew, if you only
mm-hmm.
knew where this is leading, you know,
mm-hmm.
and where this could go and all. It's a very difficult thing to do when you're in. I would imagine it's probably like, you know, any other profession. I mean, I you know, my chiropractor says he notices everybody who walks funny. So I guess, you know, it's true to a certain extent. It's the handicap of knowing those certain things. Interesting. So what are you reading right now? What are you reading for enjoyment?
Right now I'm reading a couple of books. For one book club, we just read The Rosie Project. Another
uh-huh.
book, it's lovely, just very funny, light, charming read. And
okay.
for another, my second adult book club, I'm reading Lab Girl, which is great. It's a memoir by a scientist about how she became a scientist and kind of sexism that she faced, and it's very interesting. And let's see, what are we reading for the kids book club? Something with a fox on the cover. I forget the,
how
name
sweet.
Of the book right now. Yeah. What are you
that
reading,
really
Pam?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm reading some noir crime fiction because I have a couple noir crime fiction, hard crime fiction authors coming up soon in June. We're celebrating Father's Day all month, and I've invited a lot of authors on who also have creative children. So we're hoping that the children are going to join too. I have one guy whose father writes. Yeah. One author whose son is also a musician. He's a writer and musician, and his son is a musician. So I'm looking forward to that. But I read all across genres. I'm not real big on historicals. Those are the things I don't particularly like, and I'm not real fond of memoirs. But it depends on who the writer is and what the story is. I can get sucked in. I have a pile of books right now that go from a very low shelf almost to my ceiling. I'm reading everything. I really am. But what have I read lately that I thought was great? Steve Conkley's Fractured State, which is kind of a post-apocalyptic, amazing thriller. I read Tony McGee Causey's The Saints of the Lost and Found, which was just one of the most brilliant books I've read in years. I post them all on Mondays because, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I read about 400 books a year, so I love to read. Well, I don't have a TV, so, you know, that makes a difference. When you don't,
good for you.
When you're not in front of a television, and so I'd rather spend my time reading. I read a lot of things from NetGalley that are coming out. Won't be out till the end of the year, so that's a ton of fun, too. You know, I'm very blessed. So I don't want to take all of your time. You've been very generous with it, but I do have a little thing that we do at the end of every show called Final Five. It's five quick questions and five quick answers. Are you game to play?
I'm game.
It's all about you. I'm not going to trip you up, so, because it's all about you, okay?
Why do I feel like I'm gearing up for a cross-examination right now?
No. This is really easy, okay? Favorite music to listen to?
When I'm writing the Silver Sun pickups.
Really? And how interesting. That's funny that you can listen to music and write. I should have asked that. That's wonderful. What book have you read more than once?
Pride and Prejudice. I probably read it once a year.
There's a new book out called Eligible. If you have a chance,
Curtis
pick it up.
Sittenfeld. I'm sure that my book club is going to read that one of these days.
You're going
to
love it. Oh, it's great.
Have you read
it?
Was it great?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It was adorable. I mean, I wanted more of the two characters in it to be more on the cover, on the landscape, but it was good. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it a lot. It's so well written. You're going to get a kick out of it.
It's this classic tale that I love, written by this author that
yes.
I just adore. So, yeah.
Yes. Oh, you're going to love it. Good. I'm so glad. And I have not read the original one. I've read every offshoot of Pride and Prejudice there is. You know? Well, I mean, I read it a long time ago. It's not something I have in my mind. I have a tendency to read thrillers and spy novels, you know,
Maybe you
I'm
should pick up Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
No, I don't want to
do like
that
the thrillers.
Not
yeah,
yeah, but I'm not the zombie girl. Not at all. Just the thought of that, you know, is just so bizarre to me. Thing on your bucket list. What's on your not professional bucket list? I'd like to know what's on your personal bucket list.
That's interesting. Yes, on my bucket list is to travel the world with my family. But I already did that when I got married. My husband and I both quit our jobs and we traveled the world for a year. Just like blew all of our money and
how
went around the world. So that was great. I think
what was your favorite place?
Again with my kids.
What was your favorite place?
Jordan was amazing. The lost city of Petra, which are these amazing buildings. They look like the biggest, most grand building you've ever seen, but it's carved out of this red stone cliff. This whole city of that. It was just amazing. Tahiti was just incredibly gorgeous place to have a honeymoon. New Zealand was beautiful. Thailand, Cambodia. I can't.
So you really did cover it all. Good for you.
How fun is that?
So now it's to take the kids. Are they old enough to appreciate it if you were to go sometime soon?
I think they are. Recently, my six-year-old asked me, he said, "We talk about people in China, Mommy. People in China talk about us." So I think he's starting to get a concept of, you know, there are different people in different places in the world, and he's very curious about them. So I think, yes, he would appreciate it.
What would we be surprised to learn about you?
Well, when I was in high school, I had this failed dream to become a kicker on the football team. And I practiced all summer long with my high school boyfriend, and I was only going to do it if I could really do it well, and I couldn't really do it well.
That's a wonderful story. What a great story. And you're tall. I don't think you're that tall, but you're tall. So,
yeah, I'm not
and you've got
tall.
Those long legs. But you've got those long legs. So, you know, that's interesting. What a great story. Do you have any quirky writing habits?
Well, I don't know if this is quirky or not, but ever since I saw a computer get stolen from another woman who was writing in a coffee shop, I work really well in coffee shops because, you know, it's all about ass in chair, and nothing keeps your ass in chair like the fear of losing your computer to the local heroin addict. So ever since then,
wow.
I'm just great in coffee shops. I think it's kind of twisted, but I love working
That's
there because I don't leave my table.
That's interesting. I don't understand the connection of writers and coffee shops, but it seems to be a thing. I don't even like being in a coffee shop. I don't like going to them. I don't, you know, my idea of a great cup of coffee is from 7-Eleven, and they go, you make good coffee. But
yeah,
to
no,
go and lounge
coffee.
Away.
It's about,
it's not.
You know, in my house, and the room I'm sitting in right now, Pam, I'm so glad that you cannot see it. It is just covered with piles of papers. It's like my husband calls me, I've got all these piles that just need to be filed. And if I was home, I would be very tempted to get to filing. And I can't file. I have to write my story. I'm on a book a year deadline. And there's laundry, and the goldfish bowl needs to be cleaned out. And there are just 1,000 things that I should be doing at home. And it's, in some ways, just so much easier.
It's an escape.
It's just me. Yeah, to just, I can't deal with the pile now. I have to write. Go to Starbucks.
You are so funny. That's a riot. So I have a bonus question for you. When was the first time you were comfortable enough to call yourself author?
Oh, yeah. It took a while. I'm not sure, but I think it was by like maybe my third book.
When people ask you, what do you do for a living? What do you say?
I say I'm a writer, but it took me a long time to get there, to be able to comfortably say it, to say that with a straight face.
But
now,
even
now
author, I don't even know very many people who are comfortable with saying I'm a book author, and you still say writer. So it could be journalism, it could be anything. That's funny.
Right.
It's interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting to me.
What do you say? Do you say I'm a radio host? I'm a
women's
advocate.
Talk show host.
Uh-huh.
No, I just
but
say I'm a radio
would.
Talk show host.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know, but
so
you know that's
women's,
some,
you know, advocacy.
Yeah, but
so.
that's something I do outside of, you know, that's because, you know, as a survivor, I feel like I need to pay it forward. I was very
mm-hmm.
lucky to have a tremendous court system between my family, my friends, law enforcement, the prosecutor, even the judge. You know, I was very, very lucky. I had great physicians to see. Well, I shouldn't say that. I had a great shrink to go to who helped me unwind
mm-hmm.
the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had wonderful nurses who worked with me. So I know that most women are not as lucky. And so, therefore, that's my pay it forward moment. You know, it's my pay
right.
it forward thing. But when people ask what I do, I just say, I'm a radio talk show host. And they say, what station are you on? And I say, it's internet radio. And most people don't understand what that is. So, you know, it's okay. I explain it. I just say, can you get Wi-Fi on your phone? And they say, yeah. And I say, well, that's how you find me, on your Wi-Fi. But, you know, it's a new age, Allison. It's going by really fast, but I'm loving it. I'm loving every minute of it. I get to talk to people like you and go to conferences and meet more wonderful writers. You know, you guys are my celebrities. I don't care too much for the entertainment industry. So
it's people like you who are spreading the word, who are, you know, the lifeblood of the whole business and the whole art.
Thank you
for what you do.
Oh, thanks. Oh, I love it. I'm really lucky. I get to talk to, you know, wonderful established traditional authors and long established independent authors and some really wonderful debut novelists as well. And I'm supportive of them all. I think everybody deserves a chance. So, listen, my friend, I'll look forward to seeing you at Thriller Fest, right? You're going to be up there, or are you going to be at BoucherCon?
I will not be at Thriller Fest, but I will be at BoucherCon.
I'll see you at NOLA in September then.
I will look forward to it.
I'm so grateful that you came on the show, Allison Liotta. The new book is called The Last Good Girl. Folks, you've got to go and get this book. It's
been
a great summer
with
the kids.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'll see you in September. All right.
I'll
good
see
night.
You then, yeah. Okay, good night.
Bye-bye. And that's our show for tonight. Mondays, be with me when Allison Brennan and Tony Nagy-Causey get together and have a conversation. I'm not going to be included. I'm going to be listening. Have a great weekend. Pick up Allison Liotta's book. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.